And joining us now is Deborah Turkheimer, Professor of Law at Northwestern University School of Law and a former Assistant District Attorney in Manhattan. She teaches and writes in the areas of criminal law and feminist legal theory and is co-author of the casebook Feminist Jurisprudence, Cases and Materials, and the author of numerous articles on rape and domestic violence. Welcome to Background Briefing, Deborah Turkheimer.
Thank you very much.
And what do you make of what's shaping up as another Anita Hill type of situation before the Senate Judiciary Committee? A last minute evidence emerges, the Judiciary Committee is called back, and the witness lays out her case against the nominee. Obviously, this time around, the Republicans, including the president himself, seem to be very cautious. President Trump today said, well, there'll be a little delay, you know, no big deal. And the White House counsel is suggesting that she should be heard. So at this point, they seem to be, at least on the Republican side, seem to be taking a different tack. But where do you think this is heading?
Well, I think this is a powerful moment. This is obviously hugely impactful in terms of the course of this nomination, and it has repercussions far beyond the Kavanaugh nomination as well. As to where it heads, obviously a lot depends on how Christine Blasey Ford presents when she appears in front of the Judiciary Committee. But I would expect, based on the account she's given to the Washington Post, that she will have plenty of details to offer, and she will have a very good explanation for why she waited to come forward until she did. I would expect that for many senators, maybe most senators, certainly not all senators, but she will seem to be a credible person who is telling a very painful story.
Well, as far as we can tell from the denials, the consistent denials from Brett Kavanaugh himself and from his friend Mark Judge, who the woman in question, Christine Blasey Ford, said also held her down while Brett Kavanaugh tried to sexually assault her. And indeed, her lawyer, Deborah Katz, says that she believes that but for Kavanaugh's inebriation and his inability to take her clothes off, he would have raped her. So obviously, at this point, the issue will not be so much sexual assault and rape, but whether or not Kavanaugh lied.
That's right. This is a serious, serious allegation. There's the claim that force was used, which is universally recognized as being against the law. And so the question here will be, are the senators persuaded that this is a credible account? I think it's going to be very difficult for someone to make the case that she's believable, and yet it doesn't matter. I have a hard time seeing that comes out of this. And again, because Kavanaugh denies that this incident took place, I think it's going to be very difficult to argue that the passage of time offers some sort of redemption. Redemption would require acceptance of responsibility and remorse, and then we could have a conversation about whether the decades that have intervened changed the calculus. But that's not what we have here. We have a competing account that is the diametric opposite.
Well, Mark Judge, who is accused along with Kavanaugh of being involved in this attempted rape, he became a writer and a filmmaker, and he's written two books about his time at Georgetown Prep. One is called Wasted, Tales of a Gen X Drunk, and the other is called God and Man at Georgetown Prep. And both books are replete with teenage drunkenness, alcohol-fueled parties, getting completely annihilated on alcohol and trying to hook up. My sense is, in a way, he's introduced a kind of milieu here for this possible situation that is at the heart of whether or not Kavanaugh's going to be confirmed. He himself, Mark Judge, initially said he didn't recall, and then he denied it along with Kavanaugh, but now he's saying he didn't recall. So at the end of the day, could drunkenness, being completely obliterated, be a defense that why you can't recall anything?
Well, I should say I haven't read his books. I've read some of the excerpts that have been circulating in the past few days, and I agree that they seem to paint a picture of a lot of intoxication and behavior that we should all be troubled by. As to whether intoxication is some sort of defense in this context, it doesn't seem to me that it would be. As far as I know, Kavanaugh has unequivocally, categorically denied this. There's not the contention that he remembers it, but his memory is fuzzy because he was intoxicated. This is really just a competing account. Where Mark Judge fits into all of this, I think we'll have to see it play out in the coming days as far as what he's able to say with greater specificity about what may or may not have happened on this night to him.
And again, I'm speaking with Deborah Turkheim, who's a professor of law at Northwestern University School of Law and a former assistant district attorney in Manhattan. She teaches and writes in the areas of criminal law and feminist legal theory and is the co-author of the casebook Feminist Jurisprudence, Cases and Materials, and the author of numerous articles on rape and domestic violence. So in terms of the politics, Deborah, obviously the two women that in effect the Democrats are targeting in the hope that they can peel off Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski. Already, Susan Collins, she spent an hour on the phone with Kavanaugh on Friday. She has called for a full hearing on this. Obviously, this is all in the context of the clock ticking on the Republicans, who clearly want to rush this nomination through and get Kavanaugh confirmed before the elections, presumably as a kind of trophy, if you will, for their base. How would you rate the situation in terms of whether or not these two women on the Republican side could be influenced? Clearly, Susan Collins has made it clear that she wouldn't vote for somebody that would overturn Roe v. Wade. She's accepted his assurances that it settles law. But frankly, from the hearings themselves, some of the information that came forth, particularly in the Gaza case involving a 17-year-old immigrant on the border who was pregnant, particularly in the questioning by Mazie Hirono, indicated to me that Kavanaugh may be saying one thing, but he may well believe another thing, which is that he wants to get rid of abortion.
There are many reasons to oppose Kavanaugh's nomination. I don't know where Collins and Murkowski were going to fall on the question had it not been for this latest twist. As to where we are now, I think it's significant that the two and other senators as well were very clear about the fact that this allegation needed to be aired, that this was not something that could be pushed under the rug and have the Judiciary Committee proceed as business as usual. And so I am somewhat heartened by the fact that there was agreement, and there has been some widespread agreement about the need to slow this down. Obviously, we don't know how Collins and Murkowski will react to the testimony itself. But I do think it suggests that these allegations are being taken seriously, and we can hope that the hearing will be fair. We can hope that the woman, Christine Ford, will be treated fairly, and that her testimony will be judged without bias, without prejudice, without resorting to myths about how survivors of sexual violence behave.
So this would mean, surely, that they're not going to have their vote on Thursday, which is what the Republicans were hoping for.
I think the hearing has been scheduled for Monday. At least that was the latest news flash that I saw. So if that's the case, then yes, the vote has been postponed.
So what about the offer on the part of Christine Ford that she would take a lie detector? Would that be something that Kavanaugh would agree to as well?
Well, I don't know. She did take a lie detector, and according to the Washington Post report, she did pass that. those results would not be admissible in a court of law, but in the court of public opinion, I imagine it goes some way toward persuading some people that this is a truthful allegation. I haven't seen any reports about whether Kavanaugh has offered to do the same.
Well, we know that the Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell apparently urged the White House not to put forth Kavanaugh's nomination. He had other alternatives in mind. And that's led to speculation that there are some skeletons in Kavanaugh's closet. And one of them is the possibility of having a problem with gambling. That led Senator Sheldon Whitehouse to submit questions in writing to Kavanaugh in which he denied that he did any sports betting and said he basically just plays poker with friends. Is this a case of a lot of smoke? And frankly, if this situation wasn't being so rushed and all of the documentation wasn't being held back, there's so much, this percentage of stuff. I think at this point, the Democrats on the committee say they've only got about 10% of what they requested. So where do you come down on this? Do you think you can make a judgment when you've got these accusations swirling about based upon 10% of the paper trail?
Yeah, there's so many factors involved here, and I think your question points out that this has been a very complicated process with a lot to be concerned about. That said, at this point in time, for good reasons, all eyes will be on the Senate Judiciary Committee when this hearing resumes. And I think the immediate question for the senators will be how to respond to this very serious accusation. Again, there are plenty of other reasons to oppose Kavanaugh's nomination. It looked like that was going to break on party lines, although there were some senators who, of course, hadn't committed. But this is not a partisan issue. It shouldn't be. It may be that this is more impactful in terms of that end result.
Well, the Anita Hill hearings certainly gained extraordinary media attention. I believe it may have been some important baseball games that were actually postponed because they didn't want to lose their audience. So I don't know whether we're going to have that kind of attention, but I presume there's going to be a lot of attention on, if it's going to be Monday. Do you expect that? There'll be a lot of people tuned in?
I do. I think that even apart from this Me Too movement that we find ourselves in the midst of, this would be important and this would captivate the public. But the fact that it's occurring when it's occurring and that we've had nearly a year now of conversations around sexual assault and sexual harassment, credibility, and sort of questions of when and whether to believe accusers. Well, I think all of that in the mix is going to really highlight the importance of this moment and how the Senate responds.
Well, of course, Monday, those questionings of both the Christine Ford and presumably Kavanaugh would be done in private. But at some point or other, we should expect public testimony, surely. Surely the Democrats are going to demand that, are they not?
They probably will. They probably should. She's made clear that she's willing to testify publicly. Kavanaugh's made clear that he's willing to do that. So I don't know what's happening on Monday as to whether it's public or private, but I would anticipate that at some point, unless there's another surprise turn, that the public will hear from them.
Well, just in closing, one of the ironies, of course, of the Anita Hill hearing was that it so outraged so many women that many of them ran for the Congress and the Senate. And the two senators from out here, Barbara Boxer and Dianne Feinstein, entered the Senate as a result of their anger at what had happened to Anita Hill. And Barbara Boxer was just on television the other night pointing out that, of course, not only was Anita Hill treated shamefully, there were three other women that were prepared to come forward to buttress her her version of, because it was a he said, she said, and there were three women prepared to come forth and buttress what she had said. And Joe Biden, the Democrat in charge of the Judiciary Committee at the time, decided not to allow them to come forth. So I take it it's a somewhat different political lineup at this point on the Democratic side, even though there have been some criticisms of Senator Feinstein.
It is different. Certainly the shadow of the Thomas hearings loom over what's going on now, and these proceedings will be, you know, very much compared to what happened with Anita Hill. But yes, a lot has changed, and changed for the better from the perspective of our response to these kinds of problems and these kinds of allegations. That said, it really remains to be seen when the dust settles how this moment is evaluated and understood. And again, whether this process is fair, whether everyone is treated with respect, with dignity, or whether it goes in a different direction and brings Anita's Hill treatment to the front center of our minds.
Well, Deborah Tokaimaa, thank you very much for joining us here today.
Thanks for having me.
And again, I've been speaking with Deborah Tokaimaa, who's a professor of law at Northwestern University School of Law and a former assistant district attorney in Manhattan. She teaches and writes in the areas of criminal law and feminist legal theory and is the co-author of the casebook Feminist Jurisprudence, Cases and Materials, and the author of numerous articles on rape and domestic violence. We're going to take a brief station break and back look inside the court filings in the Manafort plea deal.